You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. On behalf of everybody at HeritageRadioNetwork.com, we'd like to send a special thank you to the Hearst Ranch, our biggest supporter and longest-running sponsor since we first started in 2009. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, visit www.hearstranch.com.
This is today's live broadcast of Unfiltered on the Heritage Radio Network with your co-host Aaron Fitzpatrick.
And Brian DeMarco.
And we're recording live today, 4 p.m. Tuesday and every Tuesday. And just a quick thank you to everybody who came out last night for the benefit at DBA for Ray Dieter. It was a huge success, and just you could feel the great energy and support in the room. So thank you to all for who came out for that. And we're going to roll into a little news. And Brian, this is going to be pegged on you because you just got back from Spain. And I know we've heard all about the crisis economically over there. And Marques de Olivarra from Toro Winery has filed for bankruptcy. So I just wanted to ask you, when you just got back from Spain, if you felt sort of a general,
pessimism,
despair over some of the wineries that are really having trouble over there.
I think that there's, you know, a little concern, and there's some consternation among Spanish and Portuguese wine producers that the money is going to run out, that the governments are going to default, and that the banks aren't going to be able to keep loaning money. And I think that there's also, you know, in Spain particularly, they've, you know, it's, I mean, without getting into the whole zeitgeist of the population, there's this post-Francoism that has been sort of prominent, where people are very optimistic and remain optimistic throughout the years post-Franco, and think that this is never going to stop. And there's generations, that the new generation, or the millennials, were born without ever knowing about fascism or Franco, so they just think that this is going to keep rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't even really realize where Spain was, where it's come, and then now where it potentially could go.
Right.
So I think it's really a fragile time there for not just wineries, but for
just
a lot
overall
of a lot of business.
Country. Yeah, yeah. Okay. We have a special guest today calling in on the line. I believe he's in Pennsylvania right now. Steve Gross, who's the creator of Root, as well as Sailor Jerry Rum and Hendrick. Excuse me. Steve, are you on the line?
I'm on the line.
Hi. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah.
Are you in Pennsylvania at the moment?
No, actually, I'm at my farm in New Hampshire in the White Mountains.
Ah, all right. Very nice. Yeah. How is it out there today?
It's crisp, about 71 degrees, and lovely and sunny and fantastic.
Wonderful, wonderful. So to give our listeners a little bit of a background, I mean, I have the beautiful bottle of Root here at the table, and I wanted to talk to you certainly about this spirit and some of the other ones that you've created, but a little bit of your background first.
Well, you know, I started, I hate to say it, but I started my career in advertising.
Okay.
Me too.
And, so did my co-host Brian. So you might have a few friends or at least clients in common.
Well, I'm not. I wouldn't say I'm ashamed of it, but it's certainly where my heart wasn't in the ad business. But I did that for 23 years,
uh-huh.
And recently we created a brand called Sailor Jerry as a hobby.
Okay.
And all these agencies enter these award shows, but I thought that was really silly. So instead, I took that money and created a brand and started as a clothing company, ended up being a rum. Now it's the fastest growing rum in the world.
Is it really?
Yeah. and we sold it 2 years ago to Glenn Fittick, or the makers of Glenn Fittick, William uh-huh. Grant & Sons. And right after we sold that, we started making Root.
Great.
And so now we have Root, Snap. Snap, I don't know if you have Snap in, you guys are in New York, right?
We are, yeah, and I just came across it, so it's more of a ginger sort of spirit,
you
yeah?
You need to try, see, my R&D is my mom.
Oh.
My mom does all the recipes, and the Snap recipe was her great-grandmother's ginger Snap recipe.
Cool.
Oh, wow.
And there's lots of great, you know, what I wanted was that sort of rich molasses taste that that her ginger snap cookies have. So that's what we set out to do, and it's really got this great, dark, rich. So it's not like a ginger liqueur. It's more like a weird ginger snap cookie whiskey kind
mm-hmm,
of thing.
Mm-hmm, okay.
What do you mix with that? What's the mixer for that?
You know, it's great with I'm not really a mixologist, and that's the weird thing, because I kind of like, I think really simple about cocktails. So mm-hmm. I just like highball. So with Snap, I drink it either in the fall, I drink it with cider, and in the summer, I drink it with lemonade.
Cool.
And if you mix it with beer, it's a great shandy. Yeah, and then about 2 weeks ago, we launched something called Ruby, and that's R-H-U-B-Y, and Ruby is the next flavor through Art and the H, which is the parent brand of Root, Snap, and Ruby. And Ruby is a rhubarb base.
Oh.
And again, it's based on my mother's rhubarb tea recipe. And it's got beets, carrots, pink peppercorns, and of course rhubarb in it. It's very interesting.
Yeah, and so it sounds like in all these spirits, you're infusing a nice savory component as well.
Yes, there's always a savory component. And you know, they really come from my Pennsylvania Dutch, Pennsylvania Mennonite background.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brian, I think are you hailing from PA as well?
Well, I mean, where are you from in Pennsylvania?
Souderton, which is near just north of Quakertown.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's near Philly. Yeah.
That's some carriage territory.
Yeah. I went to high school with Jamie Moyer, the baseball player.
Oh. Okay. I actually went to high school in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Oh yeah, so you're familiar. It's a similar area, but what I thought was interesting is all those interesting sort of folk recipes that I grew up with. No one seems to know outside of that area, and I thought it was a really great place to start experimenting. Because in the spirits business, everything was like gin, rum, scotch, mm-hmm. and I just thought, why does it have to be like that? And my distributor was like, well, no one will know where to put it in the store, and I said, great. That means people will write about it because it's interesting.
Come across
it. That really proved to be the case. Root caught on very quickly, and which we were very surprised with because it's expensive. Because it's
what is it? What is it in the shelves in the New York market?
It's about $32.
Uh huh.
Which is the reason. See, the meaning, we named it Art in the Age of Mechanical Reproduction after the Walter Benjamin essay. And which was basically about how the more artwork is reproduced, mass produced, the more it loses its aura. And I felt that is kind of, I applied that to modern living. And the more we buy cheap crap from Target and Walmart,
mm-hmm.
the more we lose our aura as people. And I thought that people should happily pay for things, because the new luxury is knowing how they were made, where the ingredients came from, and that the people who made them got paid. And so to me, it's $32. It sits right up next to like Cavassier or Grand Marnier in terms of price, but I would rather pay for the kind of luxury I'm selling than that perceived, you know, Wall Street kind of stuff.
So you can trace sort of, you know, where it's coming from
and
all that.
We know who our farmers are.
Right.
We have intimate relationships with the people who make our products.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, when you say this spirit is 100% organic, I mean, are each of those herbs, and can you talk a little bit about what makes up the, you know, components of Root and the different sort of flavor profiles. When I first came across it, I actually was at a bar in Brooklyn called Five Leaves, and I came across Nam Lee, who was tasting one of the bartenders on it, and we got to talking, and of course I was attracted to the beautiful packaging of it, and she poured a sip, and you know, all of a sudden the nose was just so alive, and I started smelling all these different things that came out of it, and I told her that I was a sommelier and was in the wine business. She's like, oh, that's so great. Actually, you know, we get really excited when we hear that sommeliers are interested in the spirit. So kind of curious as to, you know, what your take is on that as a creator, and what are all those sort of flavor profiles in there?
Well, each recipe is based on a historical story. So before root beer was root beer, it was called root tea. Mm-hmm. It was alcoholic. And it was only Charles Heyer's during the temperance movement. He's the genius who took the alcohol out and rechristened it root beer to confuse people. So we thought it'd be interesting to go back to when it was alcoholic, and we simply looked up historical recipes for root tea.
Mm-hmm.
One of the key ingredients was sassafras, which we found out was banned because I guess saffron oil is a known carcinogen.
Mm-hmm.
But we found like things like birch bark, black tea. I think for sassafras, we mixed wintergreen, spearmint, and lemon and orange peel together to kind of give you the same flavor as sassafras. So there's a real medley of herbs and botanicals in there, and there's it's a sugar cane base. So every spirit has a base. So it's either a grain base or a sugar base.
Mm-hmm.
The spirits we've made so far are sugar based, but of course there's no high fructose corn syrup in anything. So I look at them more. Not it's interesting as a sommelier, the notes and things like that, because I look at things I tend to look at them more as culinary.
Okay.
And we created these recipes again. My mother is the one who kind of helped us with this, but we looked at them the way a country chef would look at them, and put things together and in a very rustic, crude way, and just experiment that way—a pinch of this, a bit of that—and see what works.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a very different way of looking at spirits.
Yeah,
maybe it's naive. And the naivety is what actually is working.
Well, that's so interesting. I mean, the botanicals. I'm drinking it now with a bit of ice because it's warm in the studio. So we have the root, and it has the total classic note, root beer in terms of the olfactories. But when I taste it, I've got this sort of, there is some birch beer element to it.
Yeah.
There is some other sort of like. It's funny, I didn't know that Heyer's was the first root beer. For some reason, I would have thought it was maybe like A&W or something, but I guess you're probably right.
Charles Heyer's, 1876.
And is the temperance movement, do you mean prohibition?
Well, before that, see, the temperance movement took a good 100 years to get going, and it didn't culminate until prohibition. So we're talking 1830s, 1840s. And then in 1876 is when Charles Heyer came out with root beer for the Centennial Exhibition in Philadelphia.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. What was I going to... so that's... Keep going. Sorry. Oh, I don't know what I was going to say.
Oh, no, you're talking.
What
Sorry.
We wanted to do was... so technically it's classified as a liqueur.
Okay.
But... When I hear liqueur, I think of low alcohol. I think of low alcohol and very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's
that's just the perception. Yeah,
that's the perception.
Right.
So I wanted to create something that drank more like a whiskey.
On the rocks,
right.
That I could drink on the rocks, mm-hmm. or I could mix as a highball, or I could put into a complex.
My first reaction is that this is is good on its own, but there's some mixing component to it because it has sort of like an Amaro feeling.
Yeah,
to
a little
well.
Fernet.
And it's got this sort of Italian, digestive thing going on to it, and especially with you put a little ice on it, the way that it throws off some of the flavors that come out of that when it's chilled. It reminds me of that.
And also, Steve, just before we got on the show, we were having a little iced New Orleans style coffee with chicory in it, and as we popped a bottle to put root on ice, it seemed like the coffee would be really nice with that. And actually,
it's
delicious. Yeah,
it's great with coffee. And I like, you know, the way I drink root. Again, I'm a simpleton. I like it with root beer. or the Pennsylvania brand called Pennsylvania Dutch Birch Beer. And I don't know if you get it in New York or not, but it actually is like a red color, and it's the best stuff ever, and it goes great with root.
Nice. I'll definitely look out for that.
Some people drink it with a porter,
uh-huh.
with a dark beer.
Yeah, I could see that.
I could see that.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that's unique that I knew about you before today was that you've created and marketed these brands on your own. So with this rise of, you know, private wine labels and small batch labels, you know, have you sort of ascertained what the advantages and disadvantages are of developing a brand and then marketing on its own as opposed to, which is your own, as opposed to doing it for somebody else?
Well, the only way you make any money is to do it on your own.
Yeah, but I think as a, you know, as a fellow entrepreneur, I can tell you that had someone been paying me to market the brands that I represent, I probably would have sold the company three times over.
Yeah.
And when it's my money and my project, I seem to go down with the ship every time. You know, I keep reinvesting because you have to believe in it, otherwise no one else will.
And I can sit here and say, you know, I'm not into my advertising path, but man, that's why this stuff works. I know how to get it to market.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that the experience we had, so far everything I've done has worked. So I did Hendrix first.
Yeah, that's been
very successful.
Yeah, very successful to say the least. Yeah.
And then we did Sailor Jerry, which again is much bigger than Hendrix. But mm-hmm. it's interesting. It's
because if I think Hendrix. You know, rum is such a crowded category. I mean, I worked on Bacardi for years, and I know how competitive it can be, and I always thought Hendrix, I mean, I knew you guys were behind it, but I feel like that's such a win, even in such a really specific category as gin, and rum seems to be so ubiquitous that it's like you're either talking about pirates or the Caribbean.
Yeah. Well, and then the thing we did with Sailor Jerry was we said, okay, let's make it Jack Daniels, but a rum.
Mm-hmm.
So we made it very American, kind of American badass vibe to it, and it seems to be really working. It's also, each one of these products is really good liquid. And that's what you have to start with.
Yeah, they're good liquid and they're good looking.
So it's good liquid, and then make what's inside the bottle as interesting as what's outside the bottle.
Exactly, yeah.
And you can't go wrong. You know, there's a lot of micro distillers starting up, and it seems to me like you either have guys that really understand how to make good liquid, or you have stuff that's pure marketing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And rarely do the two things come together.
So what do you think is pure marketing? Let's go on the edge here.
What do I think of what?
What do you think, what brands out there, without like betraying anybody, are just pure marketing, in your opinion?
Oh, they all are.
Well, that's a blanket.
They all are.
That's
except,
pretty much,
you know, there's some really good, there's Hudson Whiskey.
Everyone sucks but you? Come on.
Hudson Whiskey, I like them a lot.
Well, they sold. They're now.
I know they sold it. They sold it to Gratz. Same people we sold Sailor Jerry to.
Did you love liquid?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think it's really rustic and very. Again, I would use the word naive, and that's actually what makes it a good whiskey to me.
Now, up in the White Mountains, there, do you see a lot of people doing some of these additional distilling techniques? And
there's one up here called Flag Hill.
Uh-huh.
And of course, I'm up here because I'm building a facility.
Well, yeah, I want to hear all about that, actually, and I do want you to keep on the line because we have to take a short break. So,
okay.
Yeah, stay tuned, and we'll talk about that project next.
Okay. Yep.
We'll be right back.
You are listening to Unfiltered on the heritageradionetwork.com. And our multi-talented producer and engineer, Jack Inslee, is just demoing a new tune from his brand Knife Show, his group Knife Show, which is playing right now. So thanks, Jack, for that. And Steve Gross, we have on the line from Root and Art in the Age of Mechanical Reproduction. So thanks for joining us again, Steve.
Sure.
So, yeah, we were just finishing up the previous segment talking about your new endeavors in the White Mountains. And it sounds kind of funny saying it like that. But I imagine you're sort of in this bounty of just paradise to start playing with all these things, you know?
Yeah, it's awesome. So we bought a farm, and we are in the process of resuscitating the land and converting it to get organically certified. And we then bought the general store in town.
Did you?
And then we bought...
That does sound familiar. I'm in the process of doing something similar on the North Fork of Long Island.
Oh, really?
Also farmland, yes.
With her bounty.
Yeah, it's with my bounty of agriculture, yeah.
Well, then we bought the inn in town.
Oh, wow. You're going to have your hands full.
Well, we're tearing the inn down. It has to come down. It's like we got it out of foreclosure, and it's like falling down.
So mm-hmm.
That's going to be where we build the... where we built the distillery.
Oh.
And,
what are the laws in upstate Pennsylvania for building of...
No, this is New Hampshire.
New Hampshire. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I thought you were a Pennsylvania boy.
Hey, it's, oh, yeah.
He but is, but have, he's in the White Mountains now.
I think it's a metaphor.
In the summer, I'm like a robber baron. I go to the, I go to where it's cool in the summer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's my goal, is to become a robber baron.
Nice.
A benevolent robber baron.
Gotcha.
Yes, like Milton Hershey. Okay, so anyway, so we bought this in, tearing it down. We're going to build the distillery there, and then we're going to use all. It's going to be all whole farm to bottle concept.
What were the products that were previously growing or are currently growing on the farm that you brought?
Well, there's not much here now. Mostly they've been doing alfalfa and stuff, but we're planning a whole slew of orchards. We're going to be we're going to use apples as the base.
Oh, great!
To do our grain neutrals, to do our neutral spirit.
So you're going to do then, something Calvados sort of style?
Excuse me?
Are you going to do sort of a Calvados style?
No. It's the apples will be my base.
Uh huh.
And then I'm going to do a whole botanical garden on the site where the inn is.
Wow.
And we're going to have it be more like a test kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
For various things that we experiment with, and then if any of them really take off, I guess we'll have to make them. We'll have to build another facility because the site we bought won't sustain huge manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone in the town wants it to be that anyway. But the whole thing we're doing up here is founded on the New England Transcendental Movement, which is so Thoreau, Emerson. Walt Whitman was one of the...
So a little Walden Pond in New Hampshire.
Yes, and we actually have, from David Thoreau's journals, we know that he came through Tamworth, shopped at the store we bought, and stayed at the inn we're tearing down. in 1858, we have his journals. And but the whole idea is that we're going back to pre-industrial romantic view where nature is still king, and we're shunning industrialization.
Mm-hmm. And you, in your projects, your endeavors, you kind of think that there is a general overall push or trend towards that on a larger scale?
I don't look at trends. Like, you were asking me who else is doing anything good in the liquor market. I don't look at anyone else. I have no idea what's going on. I do what I kind of like. I have this underlying feeling that the world is going to come to an end soon.
Oh, whoa.
And that the whiskey and spirits are going to be the new gold. And if I can manufacture this stuff, I'm going to be like, you know, sitting on a gold mine.
So let me understand. You're a drunk fatalist.
No, I'm going to sell this stuff because you won't be able to eat all the boat or anything.
So you're basically setting up a land for yourself in the White Mountains where everything is going to be self-sustainable in your own little ecosystem. And you're when the world ends, everyone's going to flock to your farm.
Yes. I have my water source. I've got my my grains, my greenhouses, everything's set up.
I think I saw this. Is this the precursor to Planet of the Apes? I think this is. Yeah.
Kind of, but it's Planet of the Whiskey Man.
So I'll call you Dr. Zaius of the whiskey world.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Perfect. So let's get back to root here, which is what we have on our table. Our producer has actually taken the cue of one of our cohorts, mascot staffers, and she has poured the root into a coffee, an iced coffee drink.
Right, which I had just mentioned, which is delicious.
But
yeah.
We've all tasted it now. We all believe this is something that you maybe could even take to market. I mean, how do you think, you know, you talked about it being an aperitif on its own, but as a mixer, I think there's a lot of different applications. I mean...
Oh, yeah, yeah. And what's great is, you know, it's weird. I built Sailor Jerry completely off-premise. Off-premise means it through the liquor stores. Like, most spirits brands grow in the bar. But I completely ignored the bars, built it in the liquor store. Because I think the people don't really go to bars. I think that they pretty much drink at home and go to parties.
What people?
just your average people.
No, the people that are now coming to Planet of the Apes.
People who aren't in New York.
You're talking about the general population of the United States, not within our microclimate of New York City, are generally spending 5 to 6 days out of the week at home, as opposed to us, who are spending 5 to 6 nights of the week out.
Exactly. So when we built Root, we did the same thing. As we said, you know what? Let's make this sell off-premise, not focus too much on the bars.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have is we have all these people. They come up to me and just say, I go through a bottle of Root a week.
Wow.
And I said, you should get some help for that. But really...
Yeah, I mean, on multiple levels.
It's more that... What they're doing is, instead of like putting a little splash into a cocktail the way a mixologist would, they're making a hearty highball where they're mixing like root beer in root, or ginger ale in root, or coffee in root.
Maybe glazing some pork ribs with it.
Yeah, or they're making pastries with it, and you'll go through a whole bottle at a time that way, and that's nice.
So let me ask you, because I've worked in the liquor business a little bit in the past. And the general consensus is that without trial, there is no repeat purchase. And so how you generate trial off-premise, is that through sampling? Or is that through hiring a marketing team that stands out?
No, we do a little bit of sampling. We set up tables at farmers markets and stuff, and we'll bake it into bread. And we'll say, you can't taste it here, but you can taste the bread, and you can get it at the liquor store down the street. But it's mostly just... through Facebook, Twitter, internet buzz, getting write-ups on blogs, doing radio call-ins like this one.
Sure. Now, are you distributing, how many markets are you distributing in?
We're probably in 45 states now.
Oh, really?
There's a few states that have been holdouts. So, we haven't gotten into North Carolina yet, or Washington State, because they're control states, and they virtually have a shutdown on any new brand.
Mm-hmm.
Annoying. Mm-hmm. The economy, but,
45 states is pretty impressive.
Yeah. And we just went into a little bit into Canada. With Snap, we'll be in full national with that soon. And then Ruby, we're just in Pennsylvania right now.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we always launch these in Pennsylvania, and then we grow out of there.
Do you think some of the success of Root is also from the sort of nostalgia? I mean, root beer for me growing up was my favorite soda. I'm very sort of nostalgic to it. Do you think that this American sort of, affection for root beer makes it that much more widely popular in terms of scale?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I also think people really want interesting stories. And I think people are willing to pay for...
A lot of
something
marketing.
Different, something interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the best way that we grow the brand is a guy takes a bottle to a dinner party, and everyone shares it. And before you know it, then they go and buy a bottle and share it with their friends. And I always say that I made root for everyone from, like, you know, annoying hipsters to fat bearded Civil War enthusiasts.
And, which in his own way is an annoying hipster.
Because it needs to be like a broader, like, we don't, the only demographic is people who are smart and want to have interesting stories. We actually team up a lot with historical societies. So we'll do all these events with the Pennsylvania Historical Society, and the average age in the room is like 80.
What?
They love this stuff.
Wow.
You know, that's so amazing. It's a really interesting way to market through history.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hate to cut you short, but we are going to enjoy this last sip of your cocktail, and I think we're going to have to sign off, but it's been such a pleasure. And,
yeah, well, thank you.
I'm very happy to try this route to our friends. And this is your co-host, Brian DeMarco, signing off.
And Steve, if you ever come down to the New York, Brooklyn, you know, please stop in. We'll give you a nice tour of the studio and do this all over again.
All right. Later. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Bye-bye. Thank you to our producer and engineer, Jack Inslee. And a shout out to Carlos as well for all your help today in producing this show. And we will see you next week. Cheers.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. There's a lot of posturing and talking around raw milk these days and how great it is. But if you really want to get a full-on investigation into the pros and cons, the risks and benefits of raw milk consumption, here's a nifty website, www.realrawmilkfacts.com. It has a laundry list of FAQs, along with information from studies and reports from American and European science communities. If you flirt with raw milk consumption, this is definitely worth taking a look at. This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Figure on the Pulse and City Winery are proud to present the Summer Barbecue Blowout Festival, August 6th, from noon to 4 p.m. The barbecue is happening at City Winery, located at 155 Varick Street in New York City. Restaurants featured at this event are Empire Mayonnaise, Van Dag, Momofuku Milk Bar, Imperial No. 9, Mile End, Mexico, Kraft, Dizzy's Club, Coca-Cola, The Meatball Shop, and Dos Toros. Providing the soundtrack for the day are Midnight Magic, Pewter Magic, New Villager, Punches, Ducky, DJ Autobot, and the Snacky Tune DJ. VIP and general admission tickets are available at citywinery.com. Finger on the Pulse of City Winery, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Heritage Foods USA, New York Magazine, Reka Vodka, Sonar, Smile, Guilt City, Sub-Zero, and Wolf. Please come out and join us for a day of fun, food, and dancing. For more information, go to www.fotpnyc.com.